Number one for breaking news for Vermonton and South Windsor, the talk of Connecticut, AM 1360 and FM 103.3.
The state of the Republican Party. You know, if we all had a crystal ball, I say this, I bring up the crystal ball a lot because, well, if we had one, you know, I think, would you want to know? Would you want to know the future?
Yes, I would. Yes.
What's the line in the sand of things that you'd want to know and something you wouldn't want to know?
I would want to know everything right down to the moment I'm going to be out of here.
Really? You want to know when you're going to kick?
I would want to know.
Really?
That. Yeah, especially if it was soon.
It'd freak you out, though.
Yeah, it would.
It would. You'd live your life differently, and I can't even say that you'd live your life like you were dying, not to quote Tim McGraw here, you know, but it might freak you out.
Yeah, it totally would. I got a feeling I would be terribly freaked out.
You'd want to know when you were going to... Wow, man. I don't know if I'd want to know that. Anyhow, we have our first guest into the Daily Connerton Memorial Company interview chair. He is the chairman of the Connecticut Republican Party. He typically joins us every other Tuesday right around this time. Let's welcome back to the show, Chairman Ben Proto. Ben, good morning. Ben, are you there? Is Ben?
Sorry, I apologize for
what
that.
What happened to you, buddy?
I had inadvertently hit the mute button.
Oh,
like
well,
so many times
we were wondering. We thought it was us. We were like, did we just lose a line on the board?
I was listening on the intro. Yeah, there may be some things I want to know that moment. No, I want to know when that is.
No, I was a little surprised to hear Joe say that. I'm like, I don't. Yeah. You know, I don't want to know that.
Joe's a strange guy. We know that.
So. Fair enough.
Well, you're just figuring that out now there, you know. All right, Ben. Okay, so here we are on the 23rd day of April. Give us the state of the Republican Party here as far as the state of Connecticut is worth. We get a state of the union. We get a state of the state. Give us a little brief state of the party.
The party's in really good shape. We're coming into May, and as you know, May is convention month when we nominate candidates. We've got candidates running in all five congressional districts. In fact, in a couple of the congressional districts, we have more than one.
I've heard.
Which is good. We have a great U.S. Senate candidate. I know Jerry's been on your show a couple times. We're rounding up candidates for the House and the Senate. And so we've been doing a number of things. 2 weeks ago, we had a very intensive 3-day training session for campaign managers, entry level. These are folks who have worked on campaigns. We took them kind of to the next level. We had folks presenting on everything from how to utilize data to how to utilize artificial intelligence in campaigns and how it's being utilized now and will be in the future, how to develop programs, how to develop budgets. And that was 3 days. We had 45 people attend that. That was the max cap we put on that. This past weekend, we had over 70 town chairs together on a Saturday morning for almost 6 hours talking about what town chairs have to do, what town committees have to do, how they can be better organized, better managed, how to recruit candidates, how to raise money, how to put together campaigns, what town committees can and cannot do legally under our campaign finance laws. We might want to make sure people not going to jail or getting fined. We've got some more training programs. We're going to be running a treasurer training program with the State Elections Enforcement Commission to kind of demystify a little bit the treasurer position. As you know, Gary, having been a candidate, it's never easy finding someone who wants to be a treasurer.
You're right. That's probably the toughest position to fill. Go ahead.
Right. And people are oftentimes scared of doing it because it's daunting. It's overwhelming. There are, you know, penalties that can be imposed. So we want to kind of demystify that a little bit. So does SEEK. They want to work with us on that and helping people understand how they can do this job, how SEEK can help them do the job. We're working on developing an early voting program that we're going to look to institute probably Well, we're working on it now, ct.bankyourvote.com. If we're encouraging people to sign up there, let us know that you're willing to early vote. We'll help you get that out come early voting time in October. We've just started a new podcast. We recorded the first episode about a week and a half ago. We're recording two episodes this week, one with Michael Whatley, the RNC national chairman, is going to be doing the podcast with me this week. That's going to be released soon. So we're doing a lot of different things. We're raising money. We're working very, very closely with the House and Senate caucuses for the first time in a very long time.
Wow.
We've put together, you know, when you may remember, Gary, when I ran in 21, one of the things I talked about was putting together that three-legged stool with the House and the Senate. We put it together. We're working very closely together. We're working on recruiting together. We're working on data development together. So we're doing a lot of things that the party should be doing, which is, you know, as I've always said, building that highway for the candidates' cars to travel down. And I think we're in really good shape coming into convention season in May.
Wow, look at you, Ben. This is good stuff. This is what I think we want to hear. All right, so let's talk about the RTCs. There are some that are more advanced than others. Where are, if an RTC is falling behind, what area is it falling behind in?
It's probably falling behind in two areas, or at least two areas. One is all RTCs struggle, or I shouldn't say all. Most all RTCs struggle with fundraising. It's not an easy thing to do. It's hard to get people to, you know, give you money to the local party. So, you know, we see a lot of, you know, the cocktail parties or the ice cream socials or the Lincoln Day dinners. And then when they do get it, they're kind of at a loss on how they can best utilize the monies they have to help their candidates in their towns. So, you know, one of the things that we talked about this past weekend with members was how to utilize those funds and how to partner with your surrounding town committees. And, you know, Gary, as we all know, every town committee is in a Senate district. Some Senate districts are larger than other Senate districts. You know, we have Senate districts that are as small as two towns. We have the largest Senate district, the 30th, I believe, is 18 towns. Mm. And how you can work with your neighboring towns to help your candidates rather than trying to do this in an isolated instance. The other thing that where they really kind of fall behind is in the digital world and social media and how to properly utilize their social media. You know, everybody thinks, you know, we post something up on Facebook and we're good to go. Well, there's a lot of technicalities behind the utilization of Facebook and social media, not the least of which you have to be certified by Facebook to be able to post political advertisement to Facebook. And you would think for the most technologically advanced company, probably in the world outside of Apple, they do things by snail mail.
Me too.
Time-consuming.
Hey.
It has to be done exactly correct, and if it's not, they kick you out. So we can help them do that. We can, you know, it's finding the proper vendors and knowing how to utilize those vendors. And so a lot of times they'll go out and hire a digital company. And Gary, you've probably heard it. We hired this. I never saw any of my digital ads.
How come
I never saw any of my digital ads?
Yep,
because
you
don't know where they're placing them because you don't understand how they're doing it. So we can help them with that, understand how to interpret the data their digital companies should be giving them and what to ask for in their contracts. So those are things that I think the town committees really have to get better at. And then obviously it's recruiting members who are going to work and do things, go knock on doors, make phone calls, put up signs, you know, help raise money. But I think the two biggest things are probably the fundraising and understanding how to utilize social media and the digital world to communicate with their voters. And one of the things, I'll tell you, one of the things that we do through the RNC is every quarter, the RNC sends us what we call the new movers list. And it's broken out by town. And those are people who have moved into a town from, it could be another town in Connecticut or it could be from another state, who are not registered yet to vote in that town.
Mm-hmm.
And who we know where they were Republicans. We send that list out and it's like, you got to go knock on these doors and say, hi, I'm Ben Proto. I'm the chairman of Stratford. And I know you just moved to town. We want to welcome you here. We're great to have you in Stratford. And here's a voter registration card. We need to get you registered to vote. We need to get you, you know, working with us. And it requires the personal touch. It requires knocking on a door. It requires talking to somebody. The data and the information is available. What we really need to do with the town committees is get them to utilize it more. And we're willing to help them do that. But they have to let us know that they're having issues or they're not understanding how to do something. We will continue to do trainings for them. But if they don't pick up the phone or send us an email and say, hey, I don't understand this, or I'm not quite sure how to do this, you know, that has to kind of be a two-way street. You got to tell us you're not understanding so we can come help you do it better.
Is recruiting, actually, we'll talk about candidates in 1 second. Getting new members for RTCs, is that still a challenge? Or, yes. You know, and actually, well, not only getting new members, but getting them to participate in committees or subcommittees within their town's RTC.
Yeah, well, oftentimes what happens, Gary, and we've just had recent, you know, this about a couple of months ago, we had RTC elections. And, you know, one of the things that kind of drives me a little bit crazy, and I know there's a lot of town committees out there that do this, is they have for the town committee that's about to be elected, the old town committee will have a nominating committee that will nominate the people they want to be on the new town committee, which is usually the people who were on the old town committee.
Yeah, right.
And, you know, I've said to people, I said, look, I don't think that would be like the General Assembly saying, okay, here are the next 151 members of the House, you know? And so I think the way you do it is you open it up and you reach out to people and you let them know that these caucuses are going to happen more than just putting a legal notice in the paper. You invite people, you utilize your social media programs, your texting programs to let Republicans know. But Gary, town committees are like any other organization, and we've all been involved with nonprofits and we've all been involved in charitable organizations that we work with. And it's true of any organization. 15 to 20% of the people do 80 to 90% of the work.
That's right.
It doesn't matter if it's a town committee, the YMCA, you know, the food drive. That's just kind of how it is in most organizations. And so it's getting people motivated to understand that, you know, for roughly a month, monthly the month of October, for the most part, is when we really, really need you to kind of focus here. We like you to do stuff the other 11 months of the year, but that month of October, early November, man, that's when we really kind of need our members to focus and, you know, go put up lawn signs, you know, go help knock on doors, go make phone calls, post to Facebook, you know, like or retweet what your candidate
is. That's right. No, you're right.
What our opponents are doing.
I got to take a break here. When we come back, I want to talk about candidates in fundraising more with Chairman Ben Proto right after this.
Colonial Moving and Storage, New England's preferred moving company for over 50 years. Family owned and operated. Whether it's across the street or out of state, ColonialMovingAndStorage.com for your free estimate or call them today.
Men, this is Dale for Northeast Men's Health. The one you love is the light of your life. And if you're like most of us, you want to do whatever you can to nurture your relationship. But if you're suffering with erectile dysfunction, you know the impacts the condition is likely having on you and on your partner. ED is a relationship destroyer. It can contribute to depression, distancing, conflicts, even breakups and divorce. And what's so disturbing about this is that most men who suffer with ED can be successfully treated, but a lot of guys don't seek treatment when they should. At Northeast Men's Health, we have protocols that are effective in well over 90% of cases. In fact, if you're like most guys, you could be having great sex within a day or two of your first appointment and maybe find you're performing like you haven't in a long time. So call Northeast Men's Health today. Your initial visit is only $99 and includes blood work, a medical consult, and if medically advised, a test dose. And if that test dose doesn't work in the office, your visit is free. Call 800-930-5956 or go to northeastmenshealth.com. We have 5 offices in the Northeast to serve you. Northeast Men's Health, a Promenic restorative health practice.
A smarter way to start the day. Gary Byron and the Talk of Connecticut. Listen without a subscription on the Talk of Connecticut free listening app.
All right, 24 minutes after the hour of 7, our guest is the chairman of the Connecticut Republican Party, Ben Proto, who joins us every other Tuesday. Let's talk about candidates and let's talk about fundraising. You said at the top of the interview that we've got a couple of candidates, I think in the 4th Congressional District, maybe even the 3rd. that are going. I don't know if do we have any? We have a candidate for the first congressional district against John Larson.
There's a couple of people who I think are going to seek the nomination. I'm not quite sure. Actually, we haven't really heard from anybody in the first district. We've talked to people. I shouldn't say that. We've talked to people over the last number of months. I don't know that anyone of any particular substance has stepped forward just yet. But I think, you know, there's the conventions on May 20th.
We're getting into crunch time. I mean, especially with fundraising is concerned. I mean, they got to start making some decisions here.
And again, part of the, you know, part of the issue that we have with recruiting candidates, and when I talk with, you know, my counterpart on the other side, Nancy DiNardo, she will tell me the same thing. It's become more difficult to recruit candidates for a lot of reasons, one of which is obviously the amount of money that has to be raised, but also the amount of time that is has to be committed to one campaigning and should you win to serving. And given kind of the state of the economy, you know, what it means to take time away from work, take time away from possibly, you know, getting a paycheck or losing hours or whatnot, it becomes more difficult. Mm. And it's also become more difficult given the state of our political discourse, which has become very personal. And, you know, Gary, you and I can remember when families were off limits to in politics.
Right. Yeah.
Families aren't off limits anymore to a lot of people. You know, we see people go after spouses. We see people go after children, which I find abhorrent. You know, you had a problem with a candidate, deal with the candidate. Don't, you know, their family is or should be off limits. And so, you know, finding people who want to put up with that has become more difficult. But, you know, we're fortunate that we have people who have stepped up across the state where, you know, we're still looking to fill. I know some Senate seats and some House seats. One of the things we talked about this past weekend with the RTC chairs. But I think we will have candidates in, I believe, all 36 state Senate district and probably most all state House districts.
When RTC chairs talk about putting up a candidate, let's say, because it's a state rep, you just said it's a state rep and state Senate year. And let's say you said, I'm glad to hear that all the Senate, you know, seats or vacancies or whatnot are filled. At least we have a candidate anyways for every Senate seat, but not necessarily for state rep seat. How? What is it? What is it that we need to convince the RTC? What tools can we provide the RTC chair of that respective district to, I don't know, about maybe not encourage, but maybe inspire someone to run?
One is, you know, what is the district? You know, so if you're, you know, running in Hartford or the New Haven districts, and look, we, you know, Steve Orozco is stepping up to run against Martin Looney again. He did, you know, 2 years ago. You know, so it becomes difficult when you look at districts like the Hartford district or the Bridgeport or the New Haven district. So, you know, it's like, you know, those are just very, very difficult districts, and it's really asking somebody to kind of step up and take one for the team. And there are people who want to do that, who want to, you know, talk about particular issues, who want to bring out particular discussion points, and that's great. In other districts, you know, is it an open seat? Is it an incumbent seat? Is it a first-term incumbent? Is it a long-term incumbent? You know, the money is the money. It's CEP. We know how much you have to raise and how much you're going to get. And it's in theory, you know, from a, on a candidate side, equal if we can raise, you know, if both sides can raise the money, everybody gets the same amount of money to run that particular candidate campaign. You know, the other part of it is time commitment. You know, we talk to candidates or potential candidates a lot, and it's like, well, you know, how much time do I have to put in campaigning? And if I win, you know, how much time do I have to put in the legislature? And, you know, and because I got a job and my boss is not going to like this, or, you know, I've got young children and I want to be able to go to their ball games or their dance recitals.
Ben, I'm just about out of time here.
You know, things like that.
I hope so
those are the challenging parts.
Is there candidate training? Just a quick answer, yes or no.
Yep.
There is.
The House, the Senate, and the state party are doing
okay,
it.
Okay, good. I'm glad to hear that. All right, we're out of time. Maybe we can talk a little bit about that next time, as well as maybe some in-depth conversations about some of these the candidates as well, for particularly for Congress. All right, Ben Proto, thanks for your time this morning. We'll chat in 2 weeks.
Take care, buddy. Have a good one. Have a good one, Joe.
You do the same, my friend. We're going to come back to open phones. All of our lines are open. I'm just waiting to hear from you.
WDRC, celebrating 100 years.
I love it when our next guest into the Daily Connerton Memorial Company interview chair is with us, because he comes live in studio, which is where he is right now. The other thing is he is able to take some phone calls at the bottom half of the hour. You know, typically when we go to open phones, he answers questions, gives you the good, the bad, the ugly. He doesn't skirt anything, and he's truly a phenomenal colleague of mine. I talk about him often, particularly on those late nights. Actually, technically, it's early morning when we're in the chamber. Oh, not just once, but every night. Even the last week of session, even on Saturday, so that we got pulled in. I want to welcome back to the show State Representative Tom Delnicki. Representative, good to see you there, my friend.
Gary, it is great to be back in studio. I remember last month I was a little bit under the weather.
That's right, yes.
I had a frog in my throat. I had woken up.
Ribbit.
And I was like feeling awful.
Hey-ho.
And I hated to do it from my house and not here in literally the epicenter of talk radio. WDRC.
Look at this
high
guy.
Praise. I
wow.
like it.
You can tell I'm feeling good.
Yeah. Who paid him?
He's feeling real good.
Check us in the mail, Tom.
Well, you know, I had that IV of coffee.
Yes. You know? Wow. Join the club. That's right. You really were my coffee partner, seatmates and coffee mates, for that matter.
Well, you know, it was an amazing time to actually be sitting next to what was to become a legend.
Oh,
in the House chambers, because quite frankly,
you're
Gary,
so full of it. Stop.
I didn't know you at the time. I had never had the pleasure. I got to know you, and I realized just how articulate and focused you are, and just how much you cared about the people that you represented.
Well, that's true.
In Newington.
Thank you. I'll take that. I'll tell you what. For everything else, forget the other stuff. I'll take that last statement. Because I did. I mean, look, you can't fake it. In being a Republican in a Democrat district, and I was outnumbered. I don't know. Somebody said I'm just under 3-1, like 2.7-1 or something like that. So, it made me work harder. I can tell you this: there wasn't an event in town that I missed. And I remember there were days where I had to go to 3 events on the same day. Actually, I remember days when we were in session in committee, and my outreach person would tell me, Gary, you've got this ribbon cutting, it's a grand opening, and it's going to be in your district, and I'm like, all right. Fortunately, you and I, because you represent South Windsor, and I in Newington, we could just drive there and come right back, and we'll be okay. Even if there's traffic on the highways, we know the back roads to get to where we got to get to. We got to get to the Capitol, and if really push came to shove, we could have called the state police and they would have given us an escort. I never did that. I was offered that once, and I said no. I didn't want to draw that kind of attention to myself.
There's something about a state trooper and a politician and Gia. Is the trooper taking him to the Crowbar Hotel, or is he got to get somewhere quickly? Which is it?
So listen, right now, if I do my math correctly and my memory serves me correctly, and this wasn't that long ago that I was there up there with you, this is the short session, which
Correct.
Means you're out the first Wednesday after the first Monday of May, which is actually coming up, I think, in a couple of weeks. You're right now in the throes of a chamber session. Before we get into the bills, and that's the next thing we're gonna discuss, how contentious is it? I'm hearing that there's not a lot of bills coming out this year, and there's not even a tweak to the budget, which I find fascinating. Let me get your take.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because I have the pleasure of sitting on the Appropriations Committee, and literally every bill we've had for review has had the fiscal portion of it removed. In other words, there's not money to be spent. We had a meeting yesterday at Appropriations, and the sections that of bills that were there for review, anything that would have a fiscal note, the fiscal note was basically taken out so as to stay within the guardrails on the budget.
Okay.
So,
because there was a rumor that the Democrats wanted to break the fiscal guardrails, despite the governor not wanting to.
Yeah. You know, I'll use a baseball analogy. It's over when it's over.
Hmm.
I hear that often, that there may be something done. I hear that there's a conceivable breach of the fiscal guardrails through some methodology. I think the bottom line is when the gavel actually falls on the last night of the session will be the telling point at which we know that there won't be anything breaching it or there will have been a breach.
What's been the most contentious bill thus far that you both sides have debated passionately?
You know, it's interesting, and it wasn't contentious, but it brought a lot of debate, and that was a street takeover bill.
Oh.
And I
what's,
say that,
what's there to debate? Isn't everybody correct. Pretty much in agreement?
Correct. Everybody was in agreement on it. There was one amendment, and ironically, it was to remove funding for communities to actually enforce it.
Fiscal note.
So that was the amendment, but the heart of the issue, you know, holding people accountable, actually remained, because there had been that line in there, that section pertaining to OPM allocating money to communities to be able to, you know, really have an opportunity to make this work. So the community is going to have to come up with the money themselves. And quite frankly, the fact that, you know, somebody can lose their ATV, somebody who was, say, a timekeeper or a guy waving a flag for some of the little racing that they were doing, somebody who was an organizer can be held accountable.
What does that mean nowadays?
Well, what does it mean?
Well, nowadays, being held accountable when I was younger meant, you know, you can get arrested.
Yeah, well, basically, you know, the situation of having your ATV, your car, et cetera, confiscated, okay? Municipalities are going to have to actually put an ordinance into effect there.
Yeah.
But the ability to have that ordinance to actually confiscate these vehicles and to hold people accountable, you know, that is a great first step. And I see this not as the last time we visit it. I have a feeling we're probably going to visit it again next year to put stronger teeth, sharper teeth into it, because there's other issues that are also that run parallel. I don't know if you've heard these little cars that these folks are driving down the street, and the minute they take their foot off the gas, it sounds like a 9mm going off.
Oh, yes.
In rapid
yeah.
fashion.
Yeah.
That's an issue of quality of life also, is the fact that you've got that problem. And the first time I heard it, I was thinking, I got to call the cops.
Yes.
Sounds like gunfire. And I'm talking about, you know, in South Windsor on Route 30, hearing those cars make that backfiring noise, that is disconcerting. And then you run into the folks that actually do it at night. Daytime is bad enough. But when you have that at night and you've got that backfiring sound and you wonder to yourself, gee, do we have
somebody taking
something?
A shot at me? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And think about it, because in Glastonbury, they've had people's homes shot at. That's occurred. It hasn't occurred recently.
Glastonbury, huh?
But it has occurred.
All right. So let's go back to this bill. What is this? What is it? What passed? What do we need to know regarding the language of the bill?
It passed the House. It's awaiting
okay.
action in the Senate.
All right.
It changes penalties for violating state laws against illegal street racing. It authorizes municipalities to adopt that ordinance I'm talking about that allows them to have some teeth to it. Allows municipalities to destroy ATVs and minicycles that are seized. Now think about that. What worse? I mean, you're a street racer and you get your ATV seized, you get your mini bike seized. And I want to recount a story for you. This had to be like 3 years ago. We had a late session, and I don't know what was – I wasn't thinking. I left the LOB. I turned left instead of right, and I went, oh, crap. Well, you know, I'll just drive through Hartford. What's the big deal? It's 2:30 in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
So
that could be a big deal.
Well, again, you know, the thought process at 2:30 in the morning, you're saying, well, there's going to be no traffic on the street. So I'm coming down, I think it was Buckingham, to Main Street. And something said, clicked in my head that, you know, you should probably stop and look left and right. Because literally as I did that, there had to be 30, 40 ATVs, motorcycles.
At 2:30 in the morning.
At 2:30
by the Capitol.
A.M., Main Street in Buckingham.
Oh, Main and Buckingham.
Down by the MDC building.
Okay.
Okay?
Yeah.
And they're rip-tearing through there. Now, bear in mind, you come up to that intersection, and it's kind of blind looking to your left, and they were basically from the north end of Main going to the south end of Main, and if I hadn't been paying attention, I would have hit one of them, and that probably wouldn't have turned out too well for me. Because you think about it, with 30 of these at 2:30 in the morning, you know, number one, what's somebody doing out at 2:30 in the morning with an ATV or a motorcycle or whatever? And number two, rip-tearing down Main Street. And that, in essence, in my opinion, would constitute a street takeover.
So, but if you hit them, if you hit one of them, not purposely, but, I mean, to no fault of your own, who's liable for this?
Well, who's liable to get a beat down? Let me ask you that question.
Would be getting the beat down.
Right.
But legally.
Legally, no. I don't think there would have been repercussions there. But physically, it could very well have been a very, very bad night. Because I can recount, well, maybe 10 years ago, back when I worked at the Metropolitan District, leaving one night. We had an issue going on at the plant, leaving one night, and it was a Saturday night, pulling in to get gasoline at the gas station there on Brainerd Road, and suddenly, like literally out of the blue, a swarm of these little cars, because they used to like race down there, coming into the gas station and blocking me to the point where I couldn't get out.
All right, I got to take a quick break here. When we come back, your boys over at Pura approved the Eversource rate hike. And I want to get the lowdown on banking. And don't forget, open phones at the bottom half. If you got a question for State Representative Tom Delnicki live in studio, and he's going to stay with us beyond this half hour, call now. Get into the queue. That way you're guaranteed to ask your question, you yourself, directly to State Representative Tom Delnicki when we come back.
At Dolan Dental Group, patients can look forward to an oral healthcare experience that far exceeds their expectations. Patient comfort is always a priority, and they won't rest until you're 100% satisfied with their efforts. Go online to dolandental.com to meet their dentists and to read what their present patients think. From preventative dentistry, restorative, cosmetic, implants, Invisalign, and emergency dentistry, new patients are more than welcome. Dolan Dental, Silas Dean Highway, Wethersfield, dolandental.com today.
Elevate your legacy with Daley Connerton Memorial Company. Introducing Daley Connerton Monuments, where dreams take shape in stone. Immerse in custom craftsmanship, where every chisel stroke narrates a tale. Transform memories into magnificent monuments while you cherish the past, celebrate the present, and immortalize your story in granite and marble. Let Daley Connerton carve your vision into reality, creating iconic monuments that stand as a testament to your legacy. Call Daley Connerton, 860-242-4133. Daley Connerton, where memories live forever.
Number one for breaking news for Vernon, Canton, and Rocky Hill. The Talk of Connecticut. AM 1360, FM 103.3.
23 minutes after the hour of 8 o'clock, our guest live in studio, State Representative Tom Delnicki. Don't forget, he's also going to be taking your questions the next half hour. All right, we're talking about Pura. I know that you have constant communication with them.
Right.
They just approved another rate hike with Eversource and United Illuminating.
You know, it was interesting. The chair of Pura voted against the rate hike, and the other two members voted for it. there comes a time when we've got to take a good hard look about how we are actually addressing the issue of rate increases. And every time I think about it, and I commend Dan Champagne over in Vernon and the town manager there, because they—
Former state senator.
They had a petition, and many of us signed up on it, to oppose the rate increases. There's a disconnect here, Gary. Now, Eversource has a guaranteed 9% rate of profit, okay, margin of profit. They're guaranteed. They call it a return on investment, 9%. And that comes out of our pockets, quite frankly. They're a money-making, profit, stock-driven institution. And the deregulation that happened years ago, I think before you were even on the legislature and in the legislature, didn't do us any good. I don't know how you put the genie back in the bottle, but there's got to be something that can be done to try to reverse what's going on here. Yeah. It should have always stayed independent as a utility and not as a profit-driven company.
I've lost a lot of faith in PURA. At first, I thought maybe there'd be a good go-between mitigator, so to speak, you know, between the citizens of the state and the public utilities, but I think they're in bed with the public utilities. All right, you had mentioned something a moment ago where you're on the Appropriations Committee. Are there any tweaks? The rumor I hear is that there's going to be no tweaks at all to the budget this year, and then somebody leaked to me that there might be a Republican budget. Is there any truth to any of this? And what's coming up? What's the Appropriations Committee doing? They must have had a light schedule this session.
Yeah, we met yesterday, and we dealt with items there where the monies have been actually taken out of the bills for our review, probably to try to stay within the fiscal guardrails, to try to keep things moving in the right direction. There is a rumor going on that you alluded to, and let's see if it comes to fruition. I don't want to let the cat out of the bag completely, but stay tuned. And that's a good thing, because anytime you have a good discussion on where we're going, a good discussion on how money should be spent is a good thing to have, because the last thing we want is total one-party rule.
What percentage of the budget are fixed obligations?
There's a huge amount of fixed cost in there. Percentage-wise, I don't even want to throw anything out, but there is a substantial amount that you really don't have a lot of purview on without seriously hurting people.
ARPA money is expiring this
Correct.
Year.
Correct.
Okay. So what ends up happening is that new departments got created, new positions got created, and now 3 years that money is dried up, there's what's called a fiscal cliff. So you either cut back, eliminate, or increase taxes. Well, look, the government doesn't eliminate anything that it creates. So forget about eliminate. Cut back, it can, but it takes the executive branch and the legislative branch to be in sync with each other. Some parts want to decrease, some others don't. I'm kind of thinking the latter of increased taxes.
I certainly hope not. You know, that's not what our goal is. Our goal, obviously,
as a Republican, the majority legislature is a different story.
You know, and there are moderate Democrats. Bear that in mind.
How many are left? Can you count on one hand?
I would say at least one hand, probably two.
One and a half.
Okay, with one and a half. It was nice to know we had a moderate caucus get together over at the Officers Club, and a number of folks showed up, myself included. Because, you know, between the right and the left, there's a sweet spot in the middle. And I think the more discussions we have.
Pat Boyd.
Carrie Wood, great person. Matter of fact, I was chatting with her We have a committee meeting this morning, believe it or not. And she wanted me to express her, hey, how are you doing, Gary?
Oh, really?
We're glad to be on there.
Well, we had Carrie Wood. I've interviewed her. She's been in studio.
Yep.
I've interviewed her live in studio. Yep. We'll bring her back on this summer.
I found her to be a very reasonable person to work with.
Yeah.
You know, and that leads me to this whole MIWA. And you're going to say, what the heck is a MIWA? I don't know if we have time for that.
We got to take a break in about 20 seconds. So I'll tell you what. Why don't I do this? Why don't I... Tom Delnicki's going to be with us for at least the next 20 minutes. If you've got a question to ask him or something that you want to get off your chest, something you want to say to him, you don't even need to go through me. You can ask him or tell him directly. All you need to do is call now, get into the queue, and you'll be on with
Number
Tom Delnicki.
Number one for breaking news from Farmington and South Windsor, the talk of Connecticut, AM 1360 and FM 103.3.
Oh, righty. Good morning. It's Gary Byron, 9-11 here on this Tuesday morning. Our next guest into the Daily Connerton Memorial Company interview chair is the primary drafter of the Redeclaration of Independence, is a great-grandson of Colonel James Barrett, commander of the Minutemen who engaged the British in 1775. At the North Bridge in Concord, Mass. Now, the mission of the Redeclaration of Independence is to return our nation to a constitutional republic and our government to we the people. For too long, career politicians have rigged the system with 98% reelection rate and have ignored the will of the people. They've sold us out for personal gain and that of their moneyed allies. Let's welcome to the show Barry Hinckley. Barry, good morning.
Good morning, Gary. Great to be with you.
It's great to have you with us. I had never heard of the Redeclaration of Independence, but it's got to be kind of cool having a descendant from, you know, somebody who fought in the war, you know, in the Revolutionary War.
Well, fought against the last tyrannical empire that we faced, Great Britain.
Great Britain, yeah. How did you find that out, by the way?
Well, you know, I was born on April 18th, which is the day before Patriots Day, so we always celebrated it in New England, and we actually would always go to the Concord Parade, which is a big deal, the Patriots Day Parade on the 19th every year in Concord, Massachusetts. So I was aware of it at a very young age because it was a family thing, but it wasn't, it was more of a, just, you know, it was special, but it wasn't a big constitutional deal for me when I was a younger man. But as I got older, certainly growing up in a manufacturing family and in the Northeast, I mean, you know it well, you're from Connecticut, and watching all of our factories get evacuated for China, and then, of course, watching the debt rack up, getting shouldered upon our children, I became more and more aware of how important that history was.
What have you learned about the Revolutionary War that's maybe not taught in the average history book?
Well, the immense amount of risk that these individuals took. No one had ever beaten Britain, certainly in a war like France, for example, had been battling them for, you know, centuries, you know, with massive bloodletting and destruction. And so it was completely incomprehensible that a few ragtag, liberty-loving individuals could take on the largest empire in the world. So the bravery, to me, is just overwhelming of these men and women. You know, keep in mind, my great-grandmother had to entertain the British troops in their home while her husband was out mustering the Minutemen against them, and somehow managed to talk her way out of getting, you know, locked in the house and burned to the ground with her children, as usually was the punishment for rising up against the crown.
Well, look what John Adams had to do. He had to defend them, you know. He had to defend the British in court, you know.
My big takeaway was bravery. And this, the Redeclaration was inspired by a speech I was at that Tucker Carlson was the keynote in Wilmington, Delaware, oddly about 3 miles from Joe Biden's house last September 28th. And for you listeners, if you want to Google it. It's called the ISI speech in Wilmington of Tucker Carlson. And one of the big points he made was, you know, it's very important to be brave. It's time to stand up and be brave. One of the things that's very clear to me that, and it's spoken about in the Declaration of Independence, and of course the Constitution, is our inalienable right to pursue life, liberty, and happiness. And I think too often today Americans are, you know, caught up, you know, pursuing life because keeping your head above water with inflation and rising costs of education and everything else, food, is very difficult. And of course we try to squeeze out whatever happiness we can here and there. But people are forgetting that if we don't tithe for liberty, if we don't invest in our liberty, we will lose it. Jefferson warned us of this, and so did Ronald Reagan. So this is my attempt to get as many Americans as possible to invest in liberty and remind our representatives that if they don't go to Washington to do our work, then we'll get someone that will.
And that's music to my ears. I look, the Redeclaration of Independence, I look at, you know, in researching this a little bit on you here, kind of like a measuring stick, right, with 10 tenets, with, I guess we could kind of hold our representatives accountable for the actions and efforts that they make in Congress. But what, according to you, are those 10 tenets?
Well, you nailed it. This is a measuring stick, and you also said it in your open. With a 98% reelection rate, it's really hard to displace these folks once they're in because they've rigged the system to support incumbency so much. So this gives us a chance to measure them. And of course, the goal here is to get millions of Americans to sign and the reps that represent us and senators to sign as well. So when they come back and ask for their job, we can ask them, did you pursue term limits because you signed on for that? Did you pursue a balanced budget because you signed on for that? Did you pursue securing our elections because you signed on for that? Did you pursue border security and down the list? Did you pursue leveling the playing field for American labor against foreign competition? Because if you didn't, we will find someone that will, because too often they come back and they ask for their job back, having accomplished nothing, and this will hopefully give us a measuring stick to actually hold them accountable.
Well, many of them haven't, and yet we haven't found their replacement. It seems like we've gotten off track. I don't know when it occurred or how it occurred.
Well, there's a lot of theories about that, but it really boils down. You know, I did run for U.S. Senate in Rhode Island against Sheldon Whitehouse in 2012, and I learned, sadly, way too much about how our system works, and it was all discouraging. It wasn't encouraging. And it was discouraging because the system as it's set up, you know, let me back up a sec. Our founders never expected the height of arrogance they would see from politicians today, expecting they could have the job forever. They expected public servants that had day jobs, they were farmers, they were businessmen, whatever it was, they would go and serve their nation and would go back to what they're doing. They didn't expect people to stay forever. So one of the most important things that we need to address is term limits, because as long as we don't, we're attracting people that are into self-service, not public service, and they will be there forever, and they will become corrupt.
But wouldn't you say we kind of, maybe in an indirect way, have term limits? And I don't mean constitutionally, where for the president of the United States you have to serve two terms, but even in Congress, if they're not getting it done, you vote them out. They could serve one term, for that matter.
Yeah, but the fact that mathematically it doesn't happen leads you to believe that it's not actually real, right? So 98% of the time they get reelected. So what does that tell you? I mean, the best husband and wife, Gary, don't get along 98% of the time. That's actually statistically impossible to get those kind of results. I mean, so that tells you that it's actually not fair because those outcomes are abnormal. So they have the system so stacked because they can raise so much money through the power of incumbency, and they can buy a lot of favors on the way to the next election, and they do.
Many adversaries, Barry, would say that, particularly liberals right now, will say that the Constitution should be a fluid document, that it was written in the days of colonialism, and that times have changed, technology has changed, life itself has changed. And therefore, the Constitution should change. Do you believe that?
No, because guess what hasn't changed? Humans. We're the exact same as we were. I mean, of course, we reflect the present differently and through a slightly different lens. But, you know, I have a software background, and the best code is the cleanest code. And let's take the First Amendment, for example. It's 45 words. It has five freedoms baked into it. That is the unbelievably cleanest code that's ever been written, right? And ask a lawyer to write that today. It would be thousands of words long. It is so good. It is so clean. And our founders thought about that exact question, and they provided for ways to us to get amendments, either through a constitutional convention or through passing one through Congress. There are ways to change the Constitution. They're called amendments. We have 27 of them. If you want to change it, get an amendment. It is already provided for.
Can you find an answer to any, just about any problem? Can you find the answer within the Constitution?
Well, I mean, that's a broad question. Any problem, any governmental problem. I certainly believe, for example, that there is a problem in that, as we talked about with term limits. And interestingly, Congress actually enacted that on a president because, you know, Roosevelt was getting too powerful. So they enacted term limits on the president because they saw him as a threat, but certainly not themselves. You know, that was, we call for it. It's the second tenet we call for in the Redeclaration of Independence. The third tenet. The second tenet, very important, I think like states, our federal government should balance the budget, except in the case of emergency. And they're not, $1 trillion every 100 days is spending our children into indentured servitude. So there are things we need to address that aren't addressed in the Constitution, and hopefully the redeclaration can point our leaders in the direction to close these gaps.
When was it first noticed? What led us astray, if you will, from referring to the Constitution? What led us to deviate from it?
Well, a lot of people think it was the New Deal.
Yeah.
Before the New Deal, about 1/3 of all tax receipts in the country were federal and the rest were state and local. That slowly began to change after the New Deal and then, of course, all the borrowing during World War II. And now it's 2/3 of all tax receipts go to Washington and 1/3 are state and local. So that a lot of people point to that as when things really went off the rails and exactly what our founders were trying to protect us against, which is the consolidation of power in Washington, D.C., began to happen.
And you see it to this day. In fact, it's maybe exacerbated since then.
Yeah, I mean, we call it out. The top of the redeclaration, if you go to redeclaration.org, the first thing it says is we are declaring our independence from the Washington political empire. Just like what my great-grandfather was fighting against the British Empire, we believe Washington has become a political empire with outposts in the major cities around the country.
What is your purpose from redeclaration.org? What was your, what was your intent when you created the site, and what are your hopes and aspirations as a result of it?
Well, we'd like to get 10% of the country to sign it. So let's call it 25 million adults, 250 million adults in America here legally. We'd like to get 10% of them to sign that and use that as let's call it a stick to corral our representatives into doing the right thing on behalf of we the people. You know, Bill Clinton, not a man of high moral character, but a very savvy politician, once said, politicians will never start the parade, but they will jump out in front with a baton if you do. This is our attempt to start a parade to start directing the behavior in Washington, D.C. We need millions of Americans.
Well, let's say you meet that threshold. How does life change after you get 10 million people or 10%?
Well, I know politicians. Keep in mind, I ran as a citizen against career politician, and I'll tell you, I know how they act intimately, and they will not do anything unless they think there's something in it for them. And if they have hundreds of thousands of constituents telling them they want these things represented while they're in office, they will. But until we do this, they won't. It's that clear.
You don't think that Democrat elected officials have their marching orders from their leadership, and There's already a pre-existing agenda that they're marching to?
Well, who's their leadership? I mean, Nancy Pelosi calls the shots in the House, and, she was elected. So this is not going to happen overnight, Gary. Keep in mind, it took 13 years to write, ratify and then implement the Constitution. You know, we've got deep problems in this country, and they're not going to happen overnight. And I think the shortest attention span theater of Americans think that we can just solve this with an election. We can't. This is going to be a 10-year slog to take our country back because the problems are that deep and that systemic.
Okay, stay right there. Got to take a quick break. More with Barry Hinckley with RedeclarationOfIndependence.org right after this.
The U.S. government is $32 trillion in debt. How do you think that affects your retirement savings? Hi, this is Russ Stone of Scranton Financial Group in South Windsor. I work with Dave Scranton to help you develop strategies that protect and build your wealth. Dave has built a career out of helping people achieve financial freedom in every economic condition we've ever faced. Join us this Saturday at noon on the Talk of Connecticut as Dave unravels the financial complexities in terms you can use and understand. For more information, go to ScrantonFG.com.
Columbia Dental makes it easy to get quality dental care. They're open with late hours 7 days a week, so you get the best dental care whenever you need it. The Dental Guarantee. Teeth cleaning, exams, restorations, repairs, and teeth replacements. No matter what you need to keep your teeth healthy, Columbia Dental has it. Columbia Dental can do it. One day, same day, 7 days a week. Because your dental health shouldn't wait until Monday morning. ColumbiaDental.com.
The voice of reason, Gary Byron and Joe the producer on the Talk of Connecticut, WDRC AM 1360 and 103.3 FM.
25 minutes after the hour of 9 o'clock, our guest from RedeclarationOfIndependence.org is Barry Hinckley. Barry, you not only demand that our representatives sign the redeclaration, but they must also take action while in office in order to pursue its 10 tenets and, you know, kind of do their part in returning America to a constitutional republic, or, well, we'll just elect someone who will do it. How many of our elected officials have signed it?
We've got four so far. You know, keep in mind, and they're all challenging the reps. I mean, this all goes back to that 98% reelection rate of incumbencies. They will do nothing unless it's for money, that might risk them, you know, their primary job. They don't see their primary job as getting, as doing your work. Most of them, there's a few good apples down there in D.C., but they don't see their primary job as representing you. They see their primary job as getting reelected and climbing the ladder of power, serving their leadership so they can get on a better committee, which allows them to raise more money. You raise no money as a representative in Congress, you get stuck on Veterans Affairs. You raise a ton of money and you're on Ways and Means. That's how it works. And so unless we do this and we get unified, they will continue to divide us.
Yeah. I want people to check out your website. I want, you know, of course, it'd be nice people signed it as well. And I asked you how we got into this situation in the first place. And I actually happen to agree with you. I think a lot of this started during FDR's presidency. In the New Deal, having read biographies on him and all that, I have to be I'm a bit of a historian myself, but how getting out of this mess is going to take time. I understand that you say it takes one. It's just one step in that direction. What is that step? What is the first step that needs to be taken, by your estimates?
Well, it's getting involved. I hear this all the time from people. They come up to me at events and they'll say, Barry, we know things are a mess. We know the country's in deep distress, and we can't stand the idea of leaving this to our children or our grandchildren, but we don't know what to do. And this and one of the reasons I wrote the Redeclaration of Independence as a national petition, it's a really easy way to take a step in the direction of liberty and do something that doesn't cost you a dollar. All it costs you is your name and your sacred honor. And if you're afraid of having your name published, you can sign anonymously. About a third of the people sign anonymously. So, you know, it is. And I tell you, it's the old saying, if you don't know what to do, take a step in any direction, and things will flow from there. Get involved, because I will tell you, bad things happen when good people do nothing, and
that's
doing
right.
Nothing is the worst thing you can do right now.
And we're already losing our liberties. You know, it's not blatant. It's not in your face. That's not how they. That's not how they take away our liberties. It's kind of on the sly. It's very slow. It's one at a time. So that way, it's not too obvious. But make no mistake, if you were to just go back over a decade. We have less freedoms today than we had 10 years ago. I have 1 minute left. It's all yours, my friend.
Well, I would just ask your listeners to please go to redeclaration.org. That's redeclaration.org. read the Redeclaration of Independence. It literally takes a minute and a half, 2 minutes. Sign it, and then forward it to 10 friends and family members, and make sure you sign it to your rep or to the candidate that you support that's running against them, or both, and demand that they sign it and demand that they be held accountable to these 10 tenets, because they all should pass the 80-20 test. You know, 80% of Americans agree in a secure border.
Yeah, that's Reagan's. Budget. That's right. Do you think he'll ever run for office again?
I don't think so.
Oh, okay.
It was very hard and a ton of work and a huge expense. You know, I funded it myself mostly, and that was a tough thing to do in a world of big corporate money and corruption in D.C.
All right, my friend. Good luck with redeclaration.org, redeclarationofindependence.org. Barry Hinckley, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you, Gary.
You got it. When we come back, it's open phones. I see two lines open. Come on.
Fox News, I'm Therese Crowley. Campus chaos.